Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Hi again, it's another Spectrum show. Steve Warren here, as usual, and we have finally reached the month of December, final month of the year 2021, which I'm sure many of us will want to forget. I've invited back a guest that we had on several years ago. His name is Phil Chan, and he's been here talking to us a little bit about the business and the public effort he has begun at trying to rid the arts of stereotypical portrayals of ethnic organizations and people, specifically Asian, Chinese. So, Phil, let's back up. About 2 years ago, I think we spoke to you when your book came out. And at that point, you were on a crusade to kind of clean up the presentation of the Chinese dance in the Nutcracker. And as the New York City Ballet has just begun its Nutcracker season, which is their most prolific performance schedule of the whole year, tell me what the last several years has brought to you and what kind of progress have you seen? Then we'll skip a beat and look into the future.
Yeah, so just when my book came out, it was sort of at this very interesting moment where, you know, we were just discovering that COVID was a thing and, you know, starting to see a rise in anti-Asian violence and hysteria in at least American society and a lot of other places around the world. So it was very important for me to release my book at that time and get it out there. And so, you know, now looking back and seeing how much has changed, you know, some good things and some not so good things. At this point, Final Bow for Yellowface is 5 years old. And I just can't believe that it's been 5 years since the artistic director of New York City Ballet, Peter Martins, called me into his office to talk about the representations of Asian people in the Nutcracker. As you know, the Nutcracker in the second act of the show, there's all these little dances from around the world that are supposed to represent the different treats. And for a lot of companies, you know, the Spanish dance, there's actual Spanish dancing, you know, influenced the ballet, Russian dancing, of course. But, you know, Arabian dancing, Chinese dancing, you know, those cultures were really fantasies for European creators at that time. So we have a lot of caricature, a lot of stereotypes of Asian people. So, you know, like Fu Manchu mustaches, the rice paddy hats, the bobbing and the shuffling, which are in some cases historically accurate. You know, Chinese people did have the Q hairstyle, but we also banned that hairstyle. We also went through a period where we were saying, okay, that's not a particular image that we want to be associated with anymore with millennia of Chinese culture to draw from inspiration. Why do we have to choose that one single moment, you know, sort of like the ugliest moment in our heritage? So, you know, for example, if we were doing a portraying Jewish people on stage, we wouldn't necessarily choose, you know, Holocaust pajamas and a yellow Star of David to represent Jewishness when there's so much rich Jewish culture and heritage that you can draw from. So similar case. You know, obviously COVID has shut down a lot of the, you know, a lot of the performances over the last year. And so it gave folks time in tandem with the murder of George Floyd to really think about, you know, race. And I think the big issue is that, you know, a lot of these Western performing arts organizations, opera, ballet, et cetera, they're having to shift from being a Eurocentric cultural model to a multiracial one. So if you think about where these art forms came from, they came from, you know, Russia, from France, from Europe. They were paid for by the king or by the czar, and they were for the elite. And that's where a lot of the music, you know, the best music, the best ballet from Europe came from. So the problem is now we think of it as high art. We think of it as universal. We think of it as untouchable, but it's really just like a folk dance. A ballet is just another folk dance. And so we now are trying to shift. We have these ideas of these fantasy China, Cathay, you know, Xanadu, you know, fantasies. But then we also have real Chinese people in the audience. You know, we want them to join our boards. We want them to drop their kids off at our schools. We want them to, you know, buy tickets and be subscribers. So we can't put on, you know, the Nutcracker with a Chinaman anymore, or like, you know, a chink in the box. It's just like, that's, those are slurs, by the way. I don't know if I can say that on the radio, but that's what we've been doing on the ballet stage. So, you know.
Have you been able to keep a scorecard of the number of ballet companies that have actually made a change in their characterization of the dance and the characters in it?
If you go to our website, yellowface.org, you can see the full list of everybody who's signed, who's engaging in this conversation. We were recently cited by the Paris Opera Ballet as a reason, contributing factor to their decision to no longer do blackface or yellowface in both their opera and ballet productions. So yeah, there is a lot of change happening. And I think it's in part the success of our campaign is because we're not going around trying to cancel everything. This is really quite the opposite of cancel culture, if you think about it. So cancel culture might be saying, well, the Nutcracker is an inherently racist product of, you know, it's a product of colonialist white people, and it should be, we should not do it anymore and instead have an Asian choreographer make a new Christmas ballet. You know, that's really the cancel culture approach, and ours is quite the opposite. It's actually saying, okay, we have this tradition. There is artistic value in it. It does bring in up to 60% of our company's revenue that we can use the money to commission Asian choreographers. But how do we represent Chinese people better within this existing framework? And so my analogy is like, you know, when you're driving a car, say you're driving a very fast car and it's also very heavy, and you try to turn the car really quickly, what happens to the car? You flip the car, right? Especially if you've got a lot of weight on that car. So our approach is a slow turn. It's saying, hey, let's change the Nutcracker and let's use the money from the Nutcracker to commission new artists of color. That seems to be better than just saying, we'll cancel the whole thing that anyone European has ever made for ballet history.
I think when we spoke last time, we were all sort of just getting adjusted to doing interviews, video interviews rather than in-person interviews. And I know a number of dance companies have taken great advantage of being able to video their work and have gone to a video format in lieu of being able to do their live performances. Have you had an opportunity to see any of your Nutcracker changes or the dance changes translate to some successful video productions?
Not yet. We didn't have... There wasn't too much change and videoing of Nutcracker last year. People were still, you know, we weren't even close to being able to gather in the same room yet. Nobody was vaccinated at that point. So really, this is the first year where we're starting to see any of that coming out. What I'm most excited about is Pacific Northwest Ballet just updated their Chinese from this sort of Chinaman in a box to now being a Chinese cricket, which, as you know, crickets in Chinese culture are, there's a rich history, a rich tradition around it. They're the most musical of animals. They're security guards. They're fighters. They're you know, like a jukebox kind of, you know, a musical.
Good luck charms, yeah.
Yeah, they're good luck charms, and it's a symbol of spring and hope, and it's perfect for the Nutcracker. And so they've kept the choreography, the George Balanchine choreography, intact. They've just changed the costume. So it's no longer this coolie character, but now it's a green tea cricket. And so it's replacing caricature with character. It's replacing appropriation with inclusion, right? And it's saying, you know, if you are a young Chinese person in the audience, would you rather dance the, you know, the Chinese railroad worker who pops out of the box, or would you rather dance the green tea cricket? I mean, it's the same steps, but one feels mm-hmm. so much more playful and respectful and inclusive. So that's really at the heart of our work.
Our guest this week on Spectrum is Philip Chen, and Philip is the author of Final Bow for Yellowface, which is a project that he undertook a number of years ago to try to remove the stereotypical presentation of primarily Asian characters in ballet. What do you do when you have an opera, something like Turandot, which is like the whole opera is in a separate place? How do you do that, or the ballet rather?
Yeah, there's a game I like to play called What Else Could It Be? So you have to sort of essentially boil down the work to what is essential. So who are the characters? How does this work? Like, what is the dynamic that makes this an emotional appeal? What's beautiful about this work? And then you have to think of a congruent situation that that story would also make sense, another context. You can take this approach with a single dance, a full ballet or a full opera, or even a Shakespearean play. We do it all the time with Shakespearean plays. We're very comfortable with
that.
Oh,
sure, yeah, yeah.
So why not opera? Why can't we do that same thing? So I'm actually working right now with the Boston Lyric Opera on a new program called the Butterfly Process, where we're actually deconstructing Madama Butterfly as a work. And it's a year-long conversation. They'll be hosted throughout the year in Boston, virtually and in person, where we're unpacking issues around Orientalism, around what happens when we have this fantasy idea of another culture. We're unpacking the history of Madama Butterfly, including the fact that it was actually canceled at the Metropolitan Opera right after World War II because people they didn't want people to sympathize with Japanese people at that time. So it's a work with a complicated history. But we're also talking about, you know, the geisha tropes. What does it mean to be an Asian singer in opera right now? What are the dynamics offstage, the pigeonholing that's happening for Asian singers? So, you know, really excited to dive in with Boston Lyric Opera over this next year to kind of dive into how do we produce this work responsibly for a multiracial audience in the 21st century?
In the remaining time we have, let's look ahead. You've got some new projects afoot. You want to give us a synopsis of how you're mapping out the next year or so?
Yeah. So, you know, with the fifth anniversary of Final Bow for Yellowface this year, we're really looking at a lot of the ballet programming and seeing that there's a lot of fantasy Asian ballets, you know, by La Bayadere, Bugaku, Le Corsaire, The Miraculous Mandarin, you know, but where are the ballets choreographed by Asian people? Where are our stories? So working with a few other Asian leaders, Michael Sakamoto at UMass, Jessica Tong at Hubbard Street, Ed Liang, who's the artistic director of Ballet Met, and of course, Georgina Pascogan, my co-founder and myself. We had our first board meeting this week, but we're starting a service organization for Asian American creatives and dance. So an opportunity to have professional development, to have networking, to have choreographic residencies, to basically tease out some of the issues in our community. You know, we're looking to the landscape and we're seeing that other service organizations that, you know, mean well, they see that Asians make up less than 10% of the U.S. population. So they can really only devote a certain number of resources to unpacking our issues and supporting us. And we have not done a good job in supporting ourselves. So we're calling this endeavor the Gold Standard Arts Foundation. More information about that soon. But essentially, we're looking for creative Asians, fashion designers, lighting designers, composers, choreographers, dancers, everybody who's interested in collaborating around dance and telling our own stories. We're also looking for board members, you know, volunteers, anybody who wants to get involved. Again, this is like ground floor work, but I'm really motivated. I'm really excited. And I think that we have some really good momentum and good people. So really excited.
How can people raise their hand and get in touch with you to offer their services or their time?
Yeah, they can just go to yellowface.org, www.yellowface.org, and just send us a note in the contact form, and we'll reach right out to you.
Book is still available, I presume, just about everywhere.
It is. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it at Pearl River Mart here in New York City, support an Asian-owned business. And you can find more information about the book at yellowface.org as well.
Thank you, Philip. It's very nice to keep in touch with you. When you guys get your organization up and running and you have some news to let us know about, get in touch with me and we'll get you back on here so we can generate some more information about that. And thank you very much for coming back and being on China America Radio again. And we're happy to say that during the pandemic, we haven't missed a broadcast and are still out there as well. And so we've picked up a lot of listeners for people that had nothing better to do than, listen to music at home and order takeout. So thanks again for joining us on the program.
My pleasure. Have a great day, Steve.
Join us every weekend for Spectrum on China America Radio, a weekly public service program featuring news, information, lifestyle experiences, and stories of interest to our listeners in the United States and around the world. If you have suggestions for future topics or guests to be featured on an upcoming Spectrum program, send them to us at programming@chinamericaradio.com.